and Nick Tamaro after we talked on Wednesday. And the more you looked at that Golden Gate pick six, the trickier it looked. And I think we got Nick. Nick, you there? Yeah.
Here. Good morning.
Hey. Good morning.
Hey.
How did you end up? What kind of a ticket did you end up putting together?
You know, I actually didn't. It was just one of those that I don't have a whole lot of. Yeah, it was a better pass for me than anything else, and it was one that that I thought I could see myself. I think the race that sort of epitomizes what I thought, or at least captures what I thought would happen, was the Miss Lucky Lager win, where I would have had Genpire Strikes Back and Diamonds and Champagne. Diamonds and Champagne kind of blew herself out on the front end, and Genpire Strikes Back got into a little traffic, but was pretty dull all in all. And here was a logical horse that I thought would be tough to get to as anything better than maybe a B, and there were a couple of those results. So it was one of those kind of sequences, and you and I were texting about it this morning, and it was one, I think, where you had to have a mid-sized budget, not necessarily small, not necessarily overwhelmingly large, but you needed to be able to put a little bit of money into it in order to get it out. So that's the challenge of these, and as we see, hopefully we see a lot of tracks paying them out. Obviously Tampa will pay theirs out before the end of their little stand now at the end of the month, and I'm sure as the Stronach Group has them going at various places, they'll probably pay some out too. But you know, if you're playing a mid-sized ticket, it's tough to get all of them on there. And it's a challenge that has proven to be the case pretty much everywhere, because the more you go through these sequences that are obviously big and deep and competitive to begin with, but you tack a 6-1 winner on there and a 9-2 winner on there, and if you don't really like one of those, then it obviously makes it much more difficult. So clearly a lot of people, I'm sure, were alive for smaller payoffs to some of the logicals in the last race yesterday, but the winner was enough of a price and enough of a kind of a quasi outsider to probably make it that much more difficult.
And there were a couple of places within the body that you could do okay. And I'm sure some of the people that listened to you on Wednesday, it was funny. We talked about how hard that maiden 12-5 looked, the 3-year-old fillies going six, and that, you know, that might be a place you'd have to spread. But the first horse that you mentioned, and you said the horse to beat, is Why the Long Face, and yet she ends up going off at a very attractive 5-1 and or more. Yeah, paid 1260, and so that was a nice number. And you know, as I sat there and watched, the only horse that, you know, ended up being worthwhile, at least for me, to kind of offset anything else I tried, was Loretta in the seventh. That was a horse that wasn't getting bet, ended up, you know, almost 10-1, and was a terrific play. I just a little win tote and I wheeled her around. That was, you know, the only place that, you know, made the day sing for me.
Yep, I mean, in a lot of cases, if you end up not playing and you can focus on one or two during the sequence, you can certainly almost make as much hay. But no doubt, I mean, these things pay great. The $6,000 payoff, I think, was well
fair.
Beyond what it would have been on a parlay. Yeah, so
yep. It's two and a half times.
Right. It's obviously very easy to get involved in these when they're paying them out. It is also creating quite a bit more handle in general. I think Golden Gate probably had one of their best days ever yesterday, if not. I mean, I couldn't even imagine how far back you have to go to see them handling $9 million in a day. So it's was a good move on their part, and obviously we'll see a couple of these moving forward on a regular basis.
Well, we've got some of our most familiar ovals back now on a regular basis. And with Santa Anita kicking off today, yesterday Golden Gate and Charlestown, Churchill tomorrow, I think people will, you know, horse players and industry followers and fans are really going to feel, you know, like things for in their lives are at least returning toward normal. And let's get some thoughts. How do you want to play the weekend?
Yeah, this late pick five sequence tomorrow, Churchill's outstanding. I mean, I think the card from top to bottom is really incredible, and hopefully the weather holds up. I think it's looking a lot better than it was earlier in the week, so we'll hope for the best. Obviously, the Churchill turf course drains very well, dries very quickly. Same thing with the main track, so I don't think racing will be inhibited whatsoever. I mean, for the fan element of it, obviously we want to mention Monomoy Girl coming back. I don't really see anything about that race that makes it interesting from a wagering perspective. I would imagine that most people that are playing the pick five are either going to single her or maybe use either Talk Vuv to Me or Lady Kate as backups. You're dealing with not a similar kind of layoff with Talk Vuv to Me, but certainly a situation where she's going to be looking to get back to past form and form that looks to have eluded her, at least in her four-year-old season. But Monomoy Girl is a horse that, you know, I think that as we saw Midnight Bizou go on this tour de force of sorts last year, we forgot a little bit about how good Monomoy Girl really was, including winning the Kentucky Oaks from the 14, you know, taking a sharp and informed Talk Vuv to Me and really just throttling her in the Acorn, beating Midnight Bizou on the square in the Coaching Club American Oaks, and then, you know, the Cotillion aside, she came back and proved that she clearly was the best of all of them in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. So, I mean, my hope is, like any other fan, I want our good horses to be as good as they ever were, and I hope that she comes back in top form, and the word going around is that her workouts have been very, very strong, been outworking some quality competition from Brad Cox's barn. So I'm expecting big things and hope that she gets herself squarely into the mix in this division. We can get some of the big races going pretty quickly and see what she has to offer. But, I mean, from as far as wagering goes, I think the late pick five is a great place to start and a great thing to look at, especially because this first leg is an opportunity, I think, where you can probably go pretty thin. I don't see them beating C'est Moi, who was a very impressive second first time out for Bill Mott and people that may not have been paying attention that day. That was the day after the Florida Derby, and Chad Brown debuted center aisle for OXO, and she was incredibly impressive in winning, and C'est Moi actually made a big move around the turn, looked like she might actually win the race for a couple of strides, and then the heavily favored center aisle ended up taking care of her pretty easily. But she's back for second start, and you would expect a pretty big move forward. It's probably not going to take any kind of move forward for her to win this race. There are a couple of horses that project to move forward off of decent debuts, including Tormenta, who's now new to Larry Jones's barn, and I think we can expect Skinny Dip to run a little bit better off a short layoff for Ben Colebrook. But it seems to go without saying to me that if C'est Moi is back with any kind of effort similar to what she posted in her debut, she'll be very, very tough to beat. So this is a filly, I would say, also that figures to get better with a little bit of ground. Also has some family that was good early on in her career. So no surprise that she came out swinging, and I'm expecting another move forward.
Got a first-level allowance going a mile on the turf in the eighth.
Yeah, I mean, and hopefully as I said, there's no issue with weather, and if there's not, then I think that we'll have to. This is a grab back. I mean, this is a race I think where you could pretty much expect anything. The interesting thing about it is it looks like the main speed is clear for action. He's drawn all the way on the outside, so it's a matter of how much energy he'd have to expend in order to get clear of this bunch. I would think that should ensure that there's at least a reasonable enough early gallop. The horse, I think, that you have to. You have to notice, and you're going to have to be careful with the Chad Brown runners in Kentucky, because these are horses that he's had primed. These are horses that would have been running at Belmont. Obviously, Chad's barn is geared towards April 1st through December 1st, and he certainly ran some horses at Gulfstream in April that performed very well. They would have been his Keeneland stock. Motigali is the kind of horse that you see this barn win with, and this barn wins with more horses with no turf pedigree than any I've ever seen. And it's clearly something about noticing something to do with the horses to get them onto the turf. And the fact that Motigali worked on the turf last month and now is being entered on it, I think is a very, very positive sign. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how awful this horse's turf pedigree is. Union Rags is terrible on the turf, about a 3% turf stallion, and the first family is just sprinting types. No Show Rose was 0-3. That's his only. He has two siblings to race. Nobody's tried the turf, but obviously Baby J was a dirt horse herself. She was kind of a crack sprinter early in her career. So there's not a whole lot to go on. I think you need to trust, of course, that this is a horse that is just going to improve getting to the turf for a barn that really focuses on turf racing. So I'm going to use Motigali for sure. I think you have to use Cause for Action. Limnery is an obvious one as well. Mm-hmm. Been running very, very competitively in the one other than level. And I think the only other horse you're left with is what you want to do with a horse like Lebec. He's coming off a layoff. I think you have to use him because I think clearly some of his best races make him competitive. And then you have Tankerville, who is a first time in North America for Bill Mott. And this is a horse that that performed well, I would say, overseas. I really don't think that second place finish in the Meadowview is bad. And if you're using Time Form U.S. numbers, then it certainly makes him competitive. And you're going to get, I think, a decent enough price because of how wide open this race is. So, again, this is a situation where I think you want to be as wide as possible and you want to give yourself some options. Hopefully, Saint-Moi in the first leg enables you to do that.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Lebec, just under the maker, under maker's mark, would be an inclusion, 6-1, and some other horses might get bet. So the price should stay square. 7 furlong, 50,000 claimer, non-winners of two, and you got a fascinating mix and match set of horses in here, including some off major layoffs, Yamano Maker with a seasonal debut, last seen at Saratoga mid-August for Mott and Mr. Yamazumi. This is an interesting group. A lot of first off the claim action, droppers, allowance. It's a mix and match.
Yeah, it's a good bunch, and it really plays a little bit more like a kind of a week one other than a 50 non-2 life. And I think that's because there's some restrictions in place as far as claiming goes. So some of these horses might not otherwise have been. I think that's the case. I thought I had read that somewhere. But even if it's not, it's a good field, certainly for a two-life type of event. I think that based on what you can expect pace-wise, you want to give Royal Commission a really long look. And this is a horse that obviously Jimmy DeVito, who I think is very sharp and spots his horses very carefully. This horse ran well on debut at Oaklawn and really was never going to have much of a chance in an allowance race with no parole. So he was going to need some type of softer competition. Now, of course, that was straight three-year-olds. This is a race for three-year-olds and up. But with an aggressive jockey on board and a pace scenario that even despite this bulky field, you're really only going to be dealing with a horse like Newsflash if you like Royal Commission. And I would say Royal Commission is quicker. So I think he's a horse you absolutely want to include on any kind of multi-race play. I'm also a little interested in Hirsch cutting back. I don't think he's wanted to go long. I think that he's been a little foolishly spotted on numerous occasions in his career, and I think he's had some things work against him that actually do end up proving to be decent excuses. He's needed to drop in class as well. This horse is probably just a claimer. He's probably a high-level claimer. But I think in using both of those horses, you give yourself a lot of balance in running style because clearly Royal Commission will be close to the lead, and Hirsch feels like a horse will be making one run late. So I would make sure to use both. Admire has been facing considerably better competition. Horses like Blewett and Moretti, Alma Shriek, Lemniscate, they would be overwhelming. They wouldn't be eligible, of course, but they would be overwhelming favorites in a race like this. So you want to include him as well. Another horse looking like he's getting to the right spot from a class perspective. So another situation where you're probably going to need to be at least three or four deep with your A's. And I think the good thing is that you can certainly get some prices in the mix.
I agree about Admire on the cutback. That horse of Amos's, that Adhar, a little interesting, Politi. And this is a fun race. We mentioned Hirsch. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. The feature really of the day is that 10th race, another 7 furlong group. These are 3-year-old fillies and going 7/8.
Yeah, this is a good bunch. I would imagine the Portrait is going to end up going off the favorite, if not relatively close to it. And she seems deserving, but really is no great shakes. The interesting horse in here and trying to figure out what she's going to have to offer is impossible, but Aurelia Garland ran the kind of race on debut at Belmont a little over a year ago that would lead you to believe that she could have been absolutely anything. And now, changing barns, seems to be training well. We really won't know. There's not going to be a window into that ahead of time. For a trainer that while he's done a perfectly fine job, doesn't exactly excel with horses off of layoff. So there's some question marks there. It just so happens that it looks like this field is pretty loaded with speed between Miss T2 and Sconson, Four Graces, all horses that want to be forwardly placed. So it might end up being a real battle on the front end. But it's interesting to see Aurelia Garland back, and I'm very intrigued by what she may have to offer. As far as who to use in this race, I mean, I think you're supposed to use as many as you can. I think that Most City getting back to 7/8 is very dangerous from the inside. Rates to get a nice ground-saving trip under Brian Hernandez Jr. Obviously, Portrait is a must-use class-wise. She made a premature move while wide on the course last time at Fairgrounds. That's not an advisable trip, and figures to get a much better run of it. May end up proving to be a horse that's a little bit better around one turn as well. And, I mean, as far as horses that you must use beyond that, I would say Four Graces is. I'm expecting a lot of these Ian Wilkes trainees to improve getting back to Kentucky. His barn is similar to what we were talking about with Chad Brown, where they're geared more towards the spring, summer, and fall. And really, this horse didn't embarrass herself at all last time. That was a quick pace, got in the mix of that, and now drops the furlong back to the distance, of course, where she was victorious on debut. So I think there's plenty to like there, and she'll be a decent enough price just based on how competitive this field is.
The Nightcap is a money allowance turf sprint, and 3-year-old fillies again.
Yeah, I like Call on Mischief quite a bit, and I think that she's going to get hopefully the right kind of setup with some pace in here. You have Carrick and a few others that figured a battle on the front end, Ununderstandable, and Little Chester Cheetah certainly have some speed. So I think that you can certainly count on her moving late. Chili Petten on the outside won her 3-year-old debut off the layoff for Wesley Ward, and this is a pedigree that, I mean, I think Wesley Ward's one of those guys that pretty much knows how to win on turf with horses regardless of pedigree, but this is a filly whose dam was a 3-time turf winner and actually won the Weah. So it's kind of ironic that she's going to be running 5.5 furlongs on the turf and seems to be a pretty fleet-footed sprinter, but you're conditioned, obviously, by your trainer, and her trainer is good with these kind of horses. So I think you want to use her. Fly So Pretty is going to get a lot of support. It was a big pace she ran into in the Stewart Manor last fall at Aqueduct, but nonetheless, I think she's very dangerous from way out of it, and again, the situation where you want to this sequence looks almost like I don't know exactly what to compare it to, but you've got a horse you can lean on in the first leg, and then a four legs in a row where I think you need to be as careful as possible, adding horses and deleting horses, because they're very, very wide open races. It's kind of the story of this whole weekend at Churchill. Feels like it's going to kind of be the story of the whole meet. So pick your spots carefully, and when you're putting these multi-race bets together, don't get a little too liberal, because you can see the prices on these things getting big really quickly.
Well, we've seen it, and going to be looking forward to digging through these. And, you know, Nick, as we leave, how do you, I'm curious, what's your suggestion for people when it comes to cherry picking? Obviously, if you're a Churchill, a Santa Anita fan, you're going to dive back in. But I think people people's appetites have been whetted for looking at other places. I think I'm going to guess that a lot of players have more confidence in themselves after having played places like Will Rogers and Foner and maybe Golden Gate yesterday. I'm sure some people looked at Charlestown that had never looked at it before when that card came out. I think that, you know, people should, you know, take that lesson and feel, you know, feel good about, you know, playing some places that haven't necessarily been in their regular rotation.
Like I was telling some friends of mine, a few weeks ago we were like starved folks at a 3-day-old buffet, but now we're actually getting to eat the real food again. So that's with all due respect to the tracks that have continued to run. But I mean, when you find yourself on Tuesdays looking at Foner and Mondays looking at Will Rogers and things like that, you certainly yearn for slightly more more traditional types of racing, at least. So, you know, if you're somebody who, whether you're, you know, kind of a casual player that wants to just look for for certain spots to make certain bets on a given card, then go with what works for you. If you prefer turf routes, then look at that. If you're somebody who likes to watch replays and maybe uncover trips, then certainly stick to those kind of races. But if you're somebody that followed Oaklawn closely, then you might want to look for bet backs from Oaklawn and make sure that you bet those. If you're somebody who followed Gulfstream closely, then there's obviously going to be a pretty big opportunity there. So go with your comfort zone, but don't, you know, I think that the issue that you run into with Churchill, and it's been true, I think, of Churchill for the last couple of years as the racing has really improved by leaps and bounds, is that these deep, deep competitive races can really just, I mean, they can make your bankroll evaporate in no time. So be cautious about the pools that you play into. You know, I always tell myself if, you know, when especially those first couple of weeks at Saratoga, if it's going to be too expensive for me to keep regularly playing pick fives, then play pick fours. Understanding the difference, of course, is the takeout's higher, and you know you're gonna deal with those kind of things. But don't price yourself out of the market. So make sure that you're being cautious and you're being prudent with your bankroll, and don't let it all out there those first couple of days of the meet, because these races are extremely deep and competitive, and again, they can be very difficult for kind of a weekend warrior to see his or her way through it. So stick with what makes you comfortable. Stick with the pools that make you comfortable. If you're an exacta player, then find your one key horse and maybe two or three to play them with. And if you like to play doubles, there are huge opportunities. And if you are somebody who wants to put money into multi-race bets, then there's three pick fives every day at Churchill and a couple of pick fours. So plenty of opportunity there, but understand that it's still... We're just at the beginning of this now new normal with racing, so there's a lot of opportunities that are still coming.
Well, and we wish Nick a terrific weekend. Nick, we'll talk next week. We got stakes to look at and much, much more. And stay safe, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds great, my friend. Have a good weekend. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro, N-TAM, N-T-A-M-M, 1215. We are 90 minutes in, 90 to come. Take a break. We come back. Hammer, Ed DeRosa, Andy Serling, Steve Anderson, Mike Welch. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success.
Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Is 25 minutes to the top of the hour. Little AWOL Nation, always great and always fun to check in with Hammer. Good morning.
Good morning. I like that intro.
AWOL Nation.
Very good.
I think they got something new. I think they got something new out, actually. I should look into it.
Good. Yeah, checking in from sunny Southern California, where. Couple things. We got handed a 3-month sentence yesterday again inside, which I think is, you know, I get it. We got 8 million people in the county, so you can't just, you know, open the floodgates and let everybody go. But some things are starting to open up, and it's you can feel the tension easing a little bit. They have some crazy rules here where you can go to the beach, but you can't park at the beach. You can go to the beach, but you can't sit on the beach. You can go to the beach, but you can't ride a bicycle. And but you can go to the beach and run on the beach, but you can't stop. You know, type.
Oh, that's
thing.
Funny.
So it was funny. I was down yesterday because one of my big favorite hiking spots down in Malibu was open, so I did that. And then I usually go to the beach down there. I wanted to check it out, and it's kind of a little hidden beach. It's not a quote a public beach, kind of a local spot. And I went down, and where you just usually park, just kind of park on the sand and walk in. But they had the barricades up, and at the end, where I usually go with a sheriff there, and I said, "Oh, we shut down, huh?" So I said, "How's this going to work with the beach and can't park?" And he kind of gave me a little wink, like, you know, if you're coming, we're probably not going to do much. So we'll see how what happens this weekend when we're allowed out a little bit. But it's okay. The tension, like I said, just easing out a little bit. There was actually traffic. I was on the highway the other day, and there was traffic. So it's good. It just encouraged people to do the right thing. You know, at some point, we have to learn how to police ourselves. So, but, you know, they want you to do the more masks and all that stuff, which is good. And right now, I don't have a mask, so I'm kind of, I guess you could say, I've been unmasked. We can throw that in there. There's something else going on today that obviously we need to talk about, and that's Santa Anita. Another reopening. There's been people are cautiously optimistic. There's been a lot of stops and starts here, as you know, over the last 16, 17 months. So this is a different one where under, you know, basically no fault of their own or anybody's that they're being let loose and let go again, and I think everyone, like I said, is cautiously optimistic. We're going to do 3 days a week, starting, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and so today's the day. 9 races today, 10 on the weekends, and you're just going to start slow. I mean, you know, like I said, you don't see people doing cartwheels, jumping up and down. I think everyone's going to check it out and see how it goes. But in general, it's great. I think we don't, hold on a second. What's that?
there it goes. That's the sound of the reinforcements coming, and I think we really need to take a step back, a racing step, and think really in the long run how lucky we've been so far during this virus situation. I mean, if you're a soccer fan or a baseball fan or a basketball fan, tennis, golf, you got nothing. You didn't even get a little league game to go see, and we were able to continue our sport. I think we just kind of give a nice nod to those tracks that kept us going. And, the Oak Lawns of the world and Tampa, and of course, Gulfstream's going to go no matter what, but they were there, and Will Rogers and, of course, Fawner. We showed our appreciation by betting, but I think, my gosh, a lot of us, what are you going to do? You're locked up. You got racing. I mean, we were, I think those guys deserve a lot of credit. Yeah, as we talked about, you, Steve, for keeping us going, but the folks at TVG and Fox and NBC that, we got a little more intimate with them in their houses. But you know what? Thank you for keeping us going. And now the reinforcements are here. And with Golden Gate today and Santa Anita and Churchill it's like, wow. It's, the bullpen did its job, and we got the starters coming back with, Woodbine's in action. I think New York's due with a decision today or tomorrow, I'm hearing. But it sounds like it's more positive than not. New York get back on the track, and Indiana's of the world and Lone Star. So I think it's been pretty cool in the whole scheme of things. I've got buddies that, what are you doing? Nothing. What are you doing? Playing some track in Nebraska. I'm having a ball, So it really made the time. What can I say? I mean, I will definitely be sitting in the grandstand at Grand Island, Nebraska next year. I've really taken to that. But anyway, I think it just, we really, sometimes we're a whining crew, us in the racing game, but I think we really don't realize how lucky we are with keeping our game going in some fashion. So thank you to everyone that's kept it moving along. So hopefully the baton's been passed, and now we step up a notch or two. And it's almost like shock. It's like, oh my gosh, you look at these Churchill cards, and you kind of go, oh man, we got to tread water here, slow down a little bit. But what I've learned is now you can pick and choose a little bit more. Some of these races are so good, they're hard to play. In reverse, where some people go, oh, these are great betting cards. Yeah, I guess if you like races that are you have six or seven horses can win, and it's a dartboard. But I'll be definitely checking out Churchill over the weekend, and then Santa Anita comes to town today. It's similar look as we've had, but different in the long run. They'll be. I think we got to keep an eye on the racetrack, how it's going to play. Of course, it's been playing a little slower and a little deeper than it traditionally has. So we'll keep an eye on that, the main track. I'm just looking at the works. They're not a lot of works super fast. The ones with the old bullets by them, usually you can look up and see a Baffert next to that one, so which is fine. It's great. As long as it's consistent, then, we're not worried about that. So, keep an eye on that, see how it's playing. The turf is obviously going to be firm as can be. And that usually leads early in a meet to speed doing well. So keep your eyes on that. The jockey colony really lost some meat out of the sandwich. I mean, there's no question about it. When you look down and there's no Joe Talamo, no Tyler Bays, no Martin Garcia, no Rafael Bejarano. I mean, these are California mainstays for years and years, and they've head to the Midwest and they'll be riding in Kentucky. And so there's a little bit of a void as far as there's room for some riders to come here, and once things get back online to make some hay. So there'll be somebody that, obviously steps in. Somebody's got to win the races. Drayden Van Dyke, he'll have a good shot to shine again. Flavian Pratt is obviously probably the top talent here when it comes to turf racing, at least. I would think you need to start with him. and see who he is riding, and Rispoli will decided to stay here. Very tough, those two guys on the turf, and some of the guys we've seen for years, you know, obviously Victor Espinoza is here, and Eric Greiner, and Fuentes, and so some new names to get used to on a day-to-day basis. So keep that in mind. We'll see how that goes. And I guess the plan is to run through the regular meet, which was I think, of the 21st of June, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have a calendar there. And then we'll do a couple weeks at Los Alamitos and then on to Del Mar. And they are not quite sure where they're going to start there. They're definitely going to start on time at least and maybe try and get a few days earlier there too. So, you know, hopefully Southern California can get back into a flow itself and then just become part of the national racing circuit again, because it's definitely needed. And then once New York jumps on too, it'll be that way. But I tell you what, it feels good to just have racing over here. I mean, obviously I've been there for a year or so, but it's still, you know, I mean, I grew up here. Santa Anita's like, it's just there. I can't wait till we can get back and go to the track. It's a little different that way, but hopefully they've done everything right and racing will be able to continue. But I would just, you know, going over these things, I heard you talking too. You know, everybody's had a layoff, just like Golden Gate, a little different animal, but, you know, same here. Everyone's been laid off. Most of the horses have been through some light training. You can see the ones that have cranked them up a little bit that had some anticipation, but by and large, the same trainers are going to win the races eventually. There's some trainers that do better than others off layoffs. Ron Ellis comes to mind. His horses gives a lot of time between races, so we're going to look at trainers like him. He won with one up yesterday at Golden Gate. You know, Richard Mandela does good off layoffs. Stafford does good off layoffs. You know, most of these guys are good at what they do anyway, but check those layoff stats. But in the end, I think if you just throw everything, don't even think about the layoff and just handicap as you would, I think you're going to be just fine. Like I said, the same guys are probably going to step to the top, and that is. I think it's going to be more of a style thing to see if indeed speed is going to be, you know, that prevalent and if they're going to hold on, things like that. But I think turf early, I think speed, you want to be near the front end. It usually happens when we start out, and then it's, you know, as fast and firm. We haven't had rain in a while, so keep a look at that. And no hill. There'll be no hill. I don't know if that's even on anyone's, you know, mind about coming down the hill, or if they're afraid to even bring it up. But we definitely will miss the hill, and hopefully that comes around again. But that's kind of the feeling I get when I'm talk to a few guys this morning, and like I said, they're thankful, and let's just put the head down and let's get going.
Couple of opinions, Rick, for tomorrow. I got
where am I? Okay.
Sunday, the Sunday card came up great
it's good. We're going to ease back into it. I think one of the big days was June 6th, I believe, when the Brunner had the Santa Anita Derby back and a few other good races, the Gold Cup and things like that. So I like the way they're easing into it, kind of get your feet wet, so to speak, a little bit, and then, you know, you'll see some of the good horses run here. I hope they're sticking with the three-day week right now just to get going, because face it, that's what they have here horse-wise, and see if they can, you know, build up from there. But today's card is fine. I'm gonna sit back and watch a little bit before I dive in. The weekend, tomorrow, a couple of Calbred Stakes, the Echo Eddie, which is for 3-year-old colts. And we've got actually a filly in there, Mark Glatz, who's probably going to take some action. Big Sweep, who's run once and ran very well. Pratt stays on there. But there's a horse in there I want to take a look at on the outside, the far outside, Phantom Boss for George Parabon, who gets a good horse every now and then and knows what to do. And did well here early, went to went to Churchill, a rare out-of-state run for George, won the Bashford Manor, came back at Del Mar, and they took a little breather after the I'm Smoking. Van Dyke gets on, and Michael, comebacker for him, so I was a fan of Boston there a little bit. Then the next one for the Phillies, the Calbreds, also the three-year-olds. Jeff Bondy, this is a type of race that he just does well in, smiling surely on the rail. Now, coming off a win there, looks good. Let's see. Bulletproof one for Peter Miller's got some good numbers, kind of, you know, ran a few, typical Peter Miller style, you know, right to the front and go. But those were up at Golden Gate. And, of course, Warren Showtime from Craig Lewis, who the Clubhouse Ride story. Of course, he trained Clubhouse Ride and has got some of the offspring here, and this horse has just won everything thrown in front of her. When you win the China Doll, you're doing cowbred. I class them all here, so we got to take a look at him. And on Sunday, one thing I want to talk about is the two-year-old race that's on Sunday there. It's nice to see them back. A couple things. First, I remind everyone every year, Luis Mendez, he does some training as part of a bigger outfit for the Brocklebank outfit that comes out of Utah. And every year they get horses ready to run, and they are probably the same way here. They probably have 8 to 10 stabled here, and they're at Santa Anita. They'll shuttle them back and forth. You see the DXD. Dixie Downs. It's a track, training track, full facility in Utah. And so keep your eye on him. I mean, this Love Wins right off the bat. I wouldn't be surprised. Quick little story. So I was trying to do a little backup on Dixie Downs last night. So I punched it in. And so instead of Dixie Downs, I punched in Dixon Downs. And I don't know if that rings a bell with you, but I got... When I came up, I'm getting the Dixon Downs. What is this? Way back when, about 15 years ago, the Stronach Group, which was then Magna, was thinking about buying a track and opening up a racetrack in a town called Dixon, California, which is somewhere between San Francisco and Sacramento off Route 80. And let me tell you, it's out in the middle of nowhere, and I remember every at the time going, oh, my gosh, what's going on here? Well, this was going to be the first racetrack, rec center, hotel, you know, that kind of thing, and it's pretty funny. I remember when that happened, it was like, oh, my gosh, what's going on? They were going to shut Golden Gate and move up there, and they had to go through all this county stuff and meetings and I ran across the schedule of, you know, when everything started. So it was in May of 2005, this Magna proposes Dixon Downs, and this is from some of the city planning. And I got down to February of 2007. And they had some local meeting, and it says Magna announces changes to the plan to gain community support. And it's the line was, this will prohibit casino-style gambling and slot machines and limit the audience, and the track must close down during tomato canning season. I said, okay, great. Hmm. You know, so that just tells right there. Obviously,
that's great.
What are you talking about? And there was a Campbell Soup subsidiary there that I guess, that was like the big thing that happened during tomato season, and everybody came to town anyway. But that venture obviously fell apart. But I just had a flashback when I typed this thing in. You can check it out if you Google Dixon Downs, you get a little bit of a story. But that was back when, and which kind of, you know, cues you off that, you know, there's been some strange stuff going on for a long time. But 2005, I remember, it's pretty crazy. But what's one thing that it's a small sample. It's one race. It's six horses. But if you take a look at the six horses, five of them are cowbreds, and this is an open race, which, you know, under normal circumstances, the cowbreds wait for a cowbred race. They're not running against the open horses. But I'm just wondering if this is a sign that not as many two-year-olds have been shipped here from other states as normal. Like I said, small sample, first race, too much to conclude on, but I just had... For me, who looked at that, at first I started looking at the cowbred race. I go, wait a minute, there's a Kentucky bred in here. So I don't know. Keep an eye on this, but keep an eye on Luis Mendez, of course, and all the new usual suspects. Obviously, Doug O'Neill's a win early type as well. But it's good to see 2-year-old racing back on the scene, and really not that much later. We would usually start Derby week when I started, so a couple weeks later, and look into that. And Sunday, decent feature, the Desert Stormer. Phillies and Mares going short, and Bellastina comes back after throwing a clunker out of state, but she's been known to be more of a likes that home cooking, so she's got a little gas. She'll be a short price. A couple of Baffert horses in there as Pratt gets back on, but looking for an upset. Once again, we're back to Ron Ellis again with First Star. The horse is nice, obviously wants to go a little bit longer, but she can run a little bit and might be a look at a price. But, you know, we're glad to have racing back here in California, and I'll tell you that it's great. An aside, thanks everybody for the responses. I put out a thing last night about I'm running out of TV shows to watch, which I'm sure other people are as well, and got a lot of nice responses of things, and that's great. I got to admit, I spent a lot of time in Arkansas watching TV because the weather was never great on the days off. So I burned through a lot of the regulars, and I thank you all for some of these off the wall things, which that's what I'm looking for. You know, I've been through all the regulars, but there was two on here that there was a couple that nobody mentioned two of the best shows that I've binge watched of seriously since the last 5-6 years. One was Homeland. I thought that might have been the best Ben show I've watched of all time. Somebody mentioned Homeland. So if you never watched that, put a check by that. And, you know, strap yourself in because that is a trip. And Sons of Anarchy. I mean, I'd tell you what, if you could, you know, if you don't mind a few shoot 'em ups here and you know, some stuff, Sons of Anarchy is unbelievable for you know, that's one of those ones at 2 a.m. where you're I'll watch one more. Oh, and you can't step away. So those two are good. And one sleeper, I'll give my best sleeper, kind of a little slow, but it's a little story of the internet. It's called Halt and Catch Fire. Probably never heard of it. Halt and Catch Fire. And it's a slow story about 4 seasons of how the internet kind of came about. 3 or 4 people, like, working in their garage type of thing. But anyway, thank you for the suggestions. And you mentioned Matt Wynn. I'm going to give another book suggestion again, which I did a few years ago. Incredible man, book called Down the Stretch, the story of Colonel Matt Wynn, and it doesn't even say by, it says as told to Frank Menke, M-E-N-K-E. Just a fantastic story, not just about his life, but racing in what was going on in racing at that time, and some of the stories in here blow your mind of you know, what happened, and you know, Matt Wynn was not a racing guy when he first started. He was kind of just brought into the fray, and just a wonderful story. So Down the Stretch, if you're looking for something to book, I got lucky. John Sheriff gave me his copy, and I've read it. And you know what? I pulled it out of the shelf right now, and I think I'm going to read it again. It's that good. So get back into it, guy, everyone, and thanks again to you, Steve, and everyone else. And we'll get back in and roll, and let's hope California is back on the scene for good.
Hammer, I appreciate it. Good luck this weekend, and we'll be looking forward to a couple of the big stake days that are coming up. Big sense of relief out there. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Steve. Enjoy the weekend.
Away they go. There's Hammer, and he mentioned a couple of those options. That's a curveball he threw with Halt and Catch Fire, which if you were a Mad Men. Fan was either at the end of Mad Men or the end of Breaking Bad. It came on, and it's got that Mackenzie Davis who's very good. The good kind of screwball pick, Hammer. And he mentioned Down the Stretch, the Colonel Matt Wynn story, and I brought it up the other day when Eliza McGraw was with us because she certainly could tell she drew from it for her, you know, for her work. And Exterminator, here comes Exterminator, because there's a whole There's literally a chapter where Matt Wynn lauds Exterminator as the best horse as kind of an upset candidate.